is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Now, we have been discussing the Deshaun Watson trade rumors. They have sparked up again. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle yesterday brought up that the conversations are still happening between the Miami Dolphins about Deshaun Watson, and that there could be a trade done as early as next week. So Deshaun Watson could find himself a Miami Dolphin in one way, shape, or form. That remains to be seen. So,
I think it's exciting.
Couple things to clean up. There's actually 10 criminal complaints. So it's 22 civil suits and 10 criminal complaints. It's less than I think was initially. But again, for those who don't know the legal process, the burden of proof is different between civil and criminal. Easier to convict in a civil case. But there's 10 criminal complaints and investigations by the FBI. That would be one of the things you'd be bringing on. And the other thing that I think you have to take into account, and maybe we can look this up, and I'm pretty sure this is the case. If you are placed on the commissioner's exempt list, that salary, if I'm not mistaken, is still a cap hit. Yeah. It's not removed from that salary cap.
That's correct.
So in 2021, Deshaun Watson's got a cap hit of $15.9 million. Mm-hmm. In 2022, which I tend to find a little more interesting, it's $40.4 million.
Right.
And in 2023, it's $42.4 million. So back to the original statement. If Stephen Ross and the Miami Dolphins are willing to trade for Deshaun Watson, despite much of which will not be decided until after the legal process runs its course, which I do believe there's depositions that are beginning either now or in the future in coming weeks. But even then, as far as when he actually has to go be deposed and when all this stuff would wrap up, it's probably going to be after the season. And so if that's the case, not only are you taking on the rest of his salary and that cap hit for this year, you are taking on astronomical cap hits in the next 2 years where who knows, depending on how the 10 criminal suits play out, only because that's what's ultimately going to deter him or take him away from being on the field. The civil suits will be one thing, and the NFL will then have to, you know, make their case for how they want to handle it. But that's not going to keep him from necessarily being on the field. It's the criminal, obviously. It's the criminal suits, and it's going to be that tied into the NFL's decision.
I mean, the whole thing is just bizarre, man. You would wonder. I know Stephen Ross, and you pointed out the Super Bowls and, you know, longtime owner and all that stuff. Do you think he's got some sort of a gauge from the league as to what's going to happen? Or is the league got to keep it so quiet? Do you think he hit up anybody?
I just said, how could he not?
Yeah, like that.
Or how could the NFL not? Roger Goodell works for Stephen Ross and every other owner of the league.
So they got to have conversations, right? I mean, that's why this whole thing. It's just bizarre how the NFL has either waited this long or is either just ultimately not going to do anything, and they've at least given them some sort of confidence that there's going to be something done here or nothing done here.
I think the best part of it all is we're talking about it, but we'll ultimately get an opportunity to see what happens. I mean, that's the beauty of sports, right? It's the same thing when you're preparing for the game. You strap them up, you lace them up, you're going to see what's going to play out based off of all the commentary and everything that's going to be out the door once the game starts, right? If this trade takes place, we're going to find out who's saying what, who's done what is what, and if things have changed, they may have changed. I think before we went to break, I think your logic was possibly sound in the sense that if there are conversations that are being had where these things are going to get settled and they are going to go away, I mean, why wouldn't the conversation? I don't think the conversation should be so much focused in on the National Football League. I think the conversation should be focused in on what is Deshaun Watson doing to possibly speed up how this plays out. And I think that that's something that, again, in a lot of ways, the franchises are going to be left to try to figure out things before the NFL has to get involved. If Deshaun Watson and his people figure out what they need to do and these situations go away, perceivably, and which could, I mean, maybe that happens in a reasonable amount of time. I think that that is more so what would be sensible to focus in on, because the idea of saying, well, they have to be in contact with the NFL. They have to have an idea that this is what we're going to do if we trade for him. If the circumstances have not changed in terms of what Deshaun Watson has going on, then the outcome is not going to change as well. So the minute he is about to become a guy that goes onto the field, the NFL will, at that point in time, take action with Deshaun Watson. And well, unless that's changed.
Right. So, which
unless
it,
that's
it hasn't,
changed.
But what – so here's in the legal process, right? Like, this is what could potentially change. So let's say he did settle the 22 joint civil cases. You know, then you might find some of those same accusers who dropped their criminal complaints. And that's where it all goes away. I mean, again, the burden of proof between the two is different, so that's one piece of it. But if there was any sort of settlement, and you could make the case, or you could make the argument, that the reason why you would obviously file a civil and criminal suit is because you really want to put pressure on someone where you're going to take away their livelihood as well as, you know, their income. And it forces them to come to the table a little bit quicker if they feel like there's enough evidence where they'd be able to prove where, yeah, you could go to jail for this, right? I mean, this could be a serious issue. So you may have to take my civil suit more seriously as well, you know, if you want to settle and if you want this all to go away. So sometimes that's more of the strategy behind having an accuser who's going to file both and see if they can get, you know, potentially both, right? If that got settled and those criminal charges got dropped, you know, then again, it's back into the NFL's court.
So now you have to go ahead.
Well, you know, and I guess what's hypocritical to me from the NFL is to what you just said, whether just because the legal process has changed, that doesn't mean what took place has changed.
True.
Players have been suspended without suffering any sort of legal discourse.
Yeah.
Without having anything happen from the legal system. They've been suspended 6 games. So back to my original point, where's the NFL been this whole time? Like, I understand there's certain things they won't be privy to until they can do a thorough investigation, which right now they're letting the legal process take course because the NFL or anyone else outside of Deshaun Watson and his representation, because no team's going to be able to, you know, they're not going to be at liberty to say. The court's not going to be at liberty to say. You know, no one's going to be at liberty to say until all these depositions become public. You know, once this would, you know, potentially go to court and once those things are out there for everyone to see. So because of that, like they're not going to be able to find out more until after the fact, unless all this gets dropped. The NFL does their own investigation, which you would imagine would take some time. I mean, there's already been to some degree an investigation done, but not as thorough as it probably needs to be. So that's where I kind of look at it and go, either way, the NFL should have already acted. Like, I don't care if he's on an active roster and just because he hasn't wanted to go play or the Texans haven't wanted to put him in, it doesn't matter. You've already set the precedent countless times that he should have been on the exempt list right now.
Well, the NFL's been a little busy. They've been scanning through 650,000 emails, well, so they're trying to get to the
They did conduct an interview. Yeah. They interviewed victims. They interviewed at a certain point in time, a while back, they came to the conclusion of – whatever they came to. And
well, no, there's a bunch of people, too, from the victim side that says it was quick and it wasn't necessarily as thorough as anything else. There's a ton of reports about whatever did take place.
Yeah. So. I don't want to get into speculating about what they did or what they didn't do. All I know is they did do an interview, and when they conducted the interviews, the consensus was it's going to play out, and if Deshaun Watson is in a situation where he's going to play, then the National Football League will take action from there. If there is no reason for them to take action while they're allowing the legal process to play out, then they're not going to take any action. I could sound redundant on it, but it just is what it is. But again, if this were to take place, if the Miami Dolphins do heat up to make this trade, I would first say I wonder – if the NFL would allow it, if it would become public knowledge as to what the course of action would be moving forward before that trade is completed. I would be interested to know that.
The NBA has stopped trades. I mean, granted, it had more to do, I guess, with parity in the league.
Yeah, yeah. I would be interested to see it.
Why would the NFL step in and go, yeah, we're going to put them on the exempt list. Like, you know, hey, Mr. Ross, bad idea. This is going to handicap your salary cap because you might be on the exempt list for a long period of time.
I would be interested to see if it became public knowledge, public domain. Because, again, I don't disagree that, you know, the conversations are taking place. And maybe, like we said, the legal representation of Deshaun Watson may be in these conversations as well. And things are being facilitated based off of what the assumptions and the assessment of where everything may or may not be going. I don't know for certain. But what I do know is I would be interested to see, first and foremost, if this trade does heat up and it's actually something that is about to happen, how will the NFL handle that? And then it'll be interesting to see if a trade does get solidified, knowing what the amount of money that's connected to Deshaun Watson is, what do you do next once he's on the Miami Dolphins? And then the third part of that is, what happens, what is the fallout, or what is the response to whatever decision is made? If he's put on the exempt list, or if for some reason I'm wrong and he's able to play, it'll still be interesting to see, because either way, the National Football League, in some regard, and maybe even the Miami Dolphins, are in a compromising position. Because if it turns out that this guy is guilty of what it is that he's being charged of, that's not only a black eye for the National Football League, that's a black eye on that Miami Dolphins franchise as well.
Yeah. So we've had a number of players that have maybe fallen in a category there.
I just don't know that it's been this sensitive in culture and society with things like this taking place.
Sure.
I think that's the key.
We've been more sensitive to domestic violence in previous years. I mean, I'm not saying we're not now. But with the Ray Rice situation, with the video and everything else, like, people acted immediately, and anyone who was accused of anything of the sort without even the same evidence or documented was out of there.
Yeah, you're out of there.
And in a way, this is – I'm not saying it's necessarily, you know, domestic violence in that way, but there's definitely some potential wrongdoing and everything on the part of Deshaun Watson over and over and over again. Again, you would think this would be – case closed, door slammed shut, like he's on the exempt list so they figure it out. Not the case. Back to the investigation done by the NFL. Here's the problem with that investigation. When the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, you know, comes in town to do the interview, the issue with that is, you know, if you're an attorney if you're Tony Busby and you're representing all these, you know, potential victims, alleged victims, he's not going to tell them to say anything because they're not under oath. They're not in a court of law. It's the NFL doing an investigation, right? And so that's the problem, where they probably weren't able to get anything from that, because they want to see if there's a chance to settle. They want to see if there's a chance to go to court before they're going to let all the facts and everything come out. I mean, we've seen time and time again, can the NFL be trusted with anything? Of course not. Everything that the NFL investigates or gets out eventually becomes public, as we've just seen with the Washington Football Team. So if I was an attorney and I was representing these young women, I would say, don't say anything. Because they can't be trusted, and until we get to a point where, you know, we're through the legal process, or we've settled and we've exhausted all legal avenues, then we can talk more about all of this. But until that point, let the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse come in, do their little interview,
come on.
And then we'll move on. I'm just saying, that's what it looks like in comparison to an actual legal deposition, or the FBI, or someone else who's actually got some clout and some power in all this. NFL to these women aren't going to be able to help them.
Just to give a little bit of perspective, when everything happened with Penn State, the NCAA did no legal investigation. They did no investigation. They allowed the school to do it and trusted the results from the school. And so if you think about it, if you put it in a proper context, that would be the franchise investing their dollars to do an investigation on.
Which, by the way, makes way more sense, by the way. Yeah. At least in the sense for the Texans. Like, they're the employer. Shouldn't they be as curious as anyone else?
So I'm just saying, in terms of the NFL and them doing their due diligence is really to get enough information to say, this is really bad enough right now for us to take action against him. If they didn't give the NFL what they were looking for in terms of protecting the information and creating what they're creating, then in the end, that's up to the discretion of the lawyer, the representation, and those victims or those alleged victims. But again, just to put it in proper perspective, you're talking about some serious ish that took place at Penn State, and the NCAA didn't even touch it. They did no investigation. Everything was left up to the school to do. And once the school did it, not only did they do the investigation with the free report, but then once the free report came out, they issued their own punishment. And their own punishment was then approved by the NCAA.
Yeah.
It was approved, but they issued their own punishment. So there was nothing that was done by the NCAA, the governing body of the school. So I just think that this comes down to a lot of details, and really in the end, if Deshaun Watson is not in a position where this is ready to settle and they get out of it, I just don't think that the circumstances have changed. The NFL will get involved at the point in time of where they feel it's necessary for them to get involved.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We do have a Thursday night football game coming up later on tonight.
Do we?
Yeah, believe it or not, it is week 7 in the NFL. Week 7 flying
banged
by.
Banged up Browns, though, man. Banged up.
Yeah, but you know what, though?
Yeah.
Case is back. Yeah. Case Keenum is back, folks. The gunslinger Case Keenum, the guy who the Minnesota Vikings and Mike Zimmer wish they had back instead of Kirk Cousins. And
that is a terrible take.
That is a 100% honest.
You realize
take.
Cousins is actually playing incredible the past couple years now.
They've advanced farther with Case Keenum as their quarterback than they ever have with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, that's more of a team thing because their defense is finally starting to come around. But that's a terrible hot take.
I believe that is right up there with one of the better takes that you're going to hear on radio all day. And again, I don't have a personal connection to all of this. I'm just saying, like, he is an upgrade. They would do anything. Mike Zimmer would do anything based on how he was physically assaulted by Kirk Cousins on the sideline. He would do anything to get back Case Keenum. Case Keenum never assaulted his coach like that, like Kirk Cousins did. You like that, Brady? How's that feel?
Oh, man.
You like it.
I'm not even going to respond.
You
it's
like
so
it. I feel so awkward being around y'all sometimes, man. I feel like I really do. Y'all be having some moments, boy.
Well, listen, that's what we do here. It's like brothers.
I love it. I love it. It's
three brothers.
I'm like that older busted brother that went off to college, and I come back home, and we're in the kitchen, and one of these things jump off, and I'm just trying to understand it. You know,
there's not much understanding with what Jonas is saying.
But that being said, the Case Keenum experience is back. Apparently, Baker Mayfield's shoulder was more seriously injured than maybe he wanted to let on, or maybe that he did lead on, but then wanted to show that he was going to play through it. Nonetheless, Case Keenum's the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, and this game is a little bit odd.
Or is he maybe like want to give the Browns fans a dose of like what's behind them?
Okay,
here's the reality of the Browns situation. You're not going to get Chubb or Hunt tonight. Ugh. It's going to be Dearness Johnson and Demetric Felton. The offensive line, which is the biggest key of their entire team, in my opinion, you got two tackles that are hurt. Mm. Those guys might not go. And I wonder if there's a certain element of Baker who's like, I'm trying to play through injury. I don't even know if Odell Beckham's going to go, but I'm trying to play through injury. We get a bunch of guys banged up. People are kind of getting critical of my play. All right, let's see how they like the backup when he goes in there, you know, considering what I've been dealing with physically and then around me at the quarterback spot. We'll see how he handles the situation. I wonder if there's an element of that to this whole thought process because, you know, I guess if it's pain management – and he wants to give it a week of rest, that's the only change. But, like, he can't get surgery now unless he wants to sit out a period of games. And, you know, to the best of my knowledge or what's been reported, I don't know how much worse it's gotten. Whether it's a posterior or labrum tear or when your shoulder subflexes like that, it's painful. You can shoot it up. You can take some medication for that stuff. I mean, it's not his throwing shoulder.
When you say shoot it up, what do you mean? What do you guys mean by that?
I literally mean take a gigantic needle and shoot it up. Yeah. You could use Tordal if you want, but you could use a local anesthesia.
Yeah.
That's going to numb up that area.
Lidocaine.
Lidocaine. Yeah.
A
lot of canes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you, you know, giant needle, and they just shoot it up, and we're ready to go.
I mean, giant enough to puncture a lung and you not be able to play sometimes.
Yeah,
that, you know
yeah,
I mean?
To spark a Hall of Fame career from Justin Herbert. That's
don't
a good
even
point.
Get me started on knee drains. You don't want to see that syringe.
I've done that.
You don't want to see that syringe.
How much fluid they pull out of a knee?
Bro.
Fluid is blood, dude.
Bro. You don't even and the crazy thing is that syringe is so big, they have to numb your knee first. Like they give you the little local, like what we're just talking about.
Yeah.
Just to numb the joint to be able to put that big ass syringe in where they're going to drain.
Bro.
And your knee, your body makes the noise. You start to realize like the pressure that your body is holding, pushing out on you to fight the pressure on the outside, pushing against you. My knee went
Yep. Bro, we were playing in Southern California.
Freak me
2006.
Out.
I broke off like a 60-yard run. Shocking, but it happened.
Nice.
At the end of the run, I get hit, and the way I fall, knee slams against the turf, and like LeVar just said, poof. Mm. And my knee is like a pumpkin out of nowhere.
Mm.
And so, you know, end up finishing the drive, go over, and the staff's looking at it. They're like, yeah, they're like, we need to drain this at halftime. So we go in, and at that point in time, I forget what the score was of the game. I don't think it was going great. But Charlie walks in, and I don't know if he was going to chew my ass out or what he was going to do. But Charlie Weiss walks in. He looks at me. He sees that gigantic syringe, and they're just pulling blood out of my knee. And he just got kind of like his eyes got really big, and he just turned around and walked back away.
Yeah.
Like he was going to say, I don't know what he was going to say, but he kind of looked. It was just like, oh, okay. And then we just kind of put over like a wrap on it. But man, that is one of the weirdest things to deal with.
I'll tell you what, they pulled so much off of me. I looked at it, I was like, that would be a big old
donation.
Like you could put that in a joint and that would be like a silicone. Like it would be a nice looking dip, like
okay,
you know so, I mean? Like you'd be enhanced off of using
all right, so
how
let me, I know what you're saying.
All right, let me ask you guys this.
You
yeah, very good. Way to keep it appropriate here. Let me ask you this. How much, if they pull something out of your knee, are we talking they would fill up what? Like
I just told
glass?
You.
Like a,
just,
like a, but like, with
so
like
think
a
about
glass?
It. 400
from B's to C's is what he said.
There you go. There you go.
All right. So a Weiss,
like, they pulled
so
off
a Weiss
so much.
Goblet. All right, is what we're talking.
They pulled off so much, you could get a handful of it. And it would look good in a dress.
That's like a Weiss goblet.
All right,
like a 23 ounces. Yeah, everybody's seen a Weiss goblet.
Go.
Come on. Listen, Brady, I'm sorry you're not up to speed. You drink out of wine glasses. A Weiss goblet's what they put beer in. I don't know what to tell you, man.
What IPA we're gonna talk about?
Well, since we're on the topic, I mean, what do you want to go Kua Bay from Kona?
Goblet's
always
been a word that makes me a little uncomfortable
goblet?
For some reason.
Yeah,
it's uncomfortable. It's like outdated or something. But I like it. But it's just I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's like a weird. It's one of those weird things. But let's go back to Cleveland because here's what I'm thinking about this game, right? And this is total like hairpin needle turn, but it's interesting. I like it. Brady had a great take on it in terms of pain management, figuring out okay, if you think I'm so bad and this, that, and the other, let's see if you like the backups. Well, here's the thing: there have been conversations about if Baker Mayfield may even be out for the rest of the season to recover from this injury. Case Keenum comes in. If Case Keenum plays well, I just wonder what that holds in terms of you don't have your starting backfield. Your tackles are injured. You don't know which ones are going to play. And your receiver, you got one of your main receivers who's injured. If Case Keenum is able to have sustained success in this game tonight, I wonder what that turns the conversation into moving forward. And then the idea of it from there is if that becomes what the new norm is for Cleveland for the rest of this season, then what does that mean for Baker and his contract negotiation? Because this was supposed to be the year that solidified whether he's the guy or not. And listen, I'll say this. After the Dak Prescott situation, I say anything is possible. Who's ever next up is next up at that position. Maybe it's not necessarily you play this season. But I thought coming into this season that it was actually going to be a make-or-break moment, a year for Baker Mayfield and his relevance of getting that long-term contract.
No, I think you're dead on. And what happens if Case Keenum comes in and has a Minnesota Vikings a la, what year was that, 2015, 16?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was 2017, I think.
17,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I think it was,
I mean, what happens if you see that sort of year from him the rest of the way? If Baker was going to, you know, go and recover, get it operated on, or you know, whatever comes from that. Again, I don't know the specific details to what exactly he's dealing with outside of what's been reported. But if he does come in and play that way, it kind of throws a wrench in those negotiations for an extension, right?
You would think.
I mean, it's interesting only because, you know, he's still – Baker's on his, in his fourth year. He's still got a fifth-year option that they picked up and potentially a franchise tag. But I would imagine – I think they changed the rule on this. I think you can – I'm not – you know, now it's not guaranteed. Or no, now it is fully guaranteed. So once you pick up the fifth-year option – like, it was injury only. Now it's just guaranteed. Like, he's getting that regardless. And so what are you going to do? Play it through his final year there? I mean, if you don't think he's the long-term answer, just let the thing play out? I mean, there's a lot of big question marks if this hypothetical was gonna you know, play out. But, again, we still need to see what happens tonight because yeah. Von Miller, again, has already predicted
out
murder.
For blood.
Yeah.
Murder. He said he's going to kill the man across from him.
By the way, I'd like to point something out here. You mentioned back in 2006 you had a 60-yard run, you know, which led to your knee injury, Brady, that had to get drained at halftime.
All right.
We'd just like to correct. It was 59 yards. Just want to correct
you.
So, I mean, we can round up all we want, but let's not try and, put lipstick on this thing.
Y'all boys be going back and
I'm
forth.
I'm just saying,
boy.
Man. Like I want honesty, you know, on this show.
You know what was the sad thing about
that
is? I'm pretty sure, and Jonas could look into this. Like, I had the longest rush my junior and senior year. And last time I checked, like, that shouldn't be the case. Like, that's just – me of all quarterbacks, too, like, I should not have the longest rush of the season going 2 years in a row. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was the case.
Against USC, which was probably a pretty doggone good team at that point.
Top five, top four. It was John David Booty that year.
Okay.
But they – I remember insult to injury. We tried an onside kick at the end of the game. They returned it for a touchdown. So it made the score look that much worse.
Well, I'll just say this. That 59-yard run is 59 yards more than Jonas did against USC.
I would argue that's 60 yards more than I've done against USC. But although,
Hold on. Are you talking about on the field or off the field?
Yeah,
Jonas has had his moments off the
field. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Cal.
I appreciate it.
Let's go Southern Cal. Do tell. Get
fitted for my gold jacket, Dios mío. Here's what I would ask. Here's what I want to point out. You know what's so funny about this? This is what a small world this is.
Small world.
There was a local radio station contest back in 2006, and it was called like the You Make the Call contest. Mm. And this I can't even believe I just popped in my head. And so I, as a joke, submitted a call, and basically what it was a joke. No, you had to do a play-by-play of a USC game or a highlight,
and you won.
So here's what happened. So I record it, I send it in, not thinking anything of it. Of course, you know, I want to be on the radio and all that. And I'm figuring out, you know, how can I get on the radio, but I end up making it to the final three, and so the prize was to get to call the second half opening kickoff for the Notre Dame USC game. This exact game.
That's
right after Brady was getting his knee drained. I was set to go and do the second half kickoff. Unfortunately, I didn't win the contest.
You were set to do it, but you did not win to go do it.
Exactly. But
so you weren't set to do it. You were in a position to be set to do it.
Here's why the story ties in together, because the show in which they announced the winner was Colin Cowherd's show.
Wow.
So it all ties in together there. How about that? So
that's crazy.
Yeah. Just who knows?
I still think you should get more credit for your introductions. Like, have you given LeVar one yet? Like, one of your legendary introductions?
He did. Yeah. He almost passed out.
Yeah, but LeVar. Yeah.
I watched it. I seen it with my own two eyes.
LeVar was disinterested. He wasn't really into it. I tried to give him the Michael Buffer treatment, and he was dismissive. He just walked out of the room, didn't want to hear it.
I'm a tad bit jaded, man. I apologize for that.
That's all right.
I'm not really into people being into me.
Yeah, okay.
And you were into me in that moment.
It made me uncomfortable. I am into you. That's a good point.
I didn't want that intro.
He was just giving you the Prince treatment.
Yeah, it was. Oh, man.
That is the greatest story you've ever told.
I looked at him. Like, God, this is Prince. Like, jeez.
Honey, I don't know what to tell you. It's a little awkward.
I'm like, babe, that's Prince. Like, look at him. Are you looking at this dude? Like, man, why does he look like this?
Prince, small guy though, right?
He's small.
Yeah. He's tiny.
He looked like a woman, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, hold on.
On everything.
How tall do y'all think Nick Saban is? Because this kind of messed with me.
He's pretty short.
He's tiny.
Yeah,
he's pretty short.
He's pretty short.
I swear to you, I was like, wait, what?
Nick Saban's a pretty short dude.
He's 5'6".
Damn. I mean,
you never think it because he's always standing above you. He's always like on a platform.
I never thought to think of how.
Well, I mean, listen,
it's just weird.
I never thought about his height, but he is short. He's 5'6".
There's some people who are tiny.
You know who I was blown away by before we get to break? At the Super Bowl a few years ago, he walked by, and I was shocked at how big he was. Brett Favre. Oh. Brett Favre's a thick dude. I assume, dang, Jonas. Well, no, I didn't see it like
he was
that.
Juicy?
Yeah, no, I didn't see it like that.
You have seen that. It wasn't him, but it was his Crocs and his watch.
Yeah,
right?
his Crocs and watch.
Brett Favre was just so juicy.
Was his brother who said that?
I just had never known that he was so juicy until I saw him at the Super Bowl walking by.
Word to the wise, if you're going to send a pic like that, don't out yourself with a pair of Crocs and a wristwatch. It's not not a good look for anybody involved.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enough with this, slap you-know-whatting around here. We need a guy who's got respect, a guy who's got credibility, a guy who's going to really ratchet things up a notch here. You talk about the best in the business. He is Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter for the MMQB, and kind enough to join us here every single week. An Ohio State fan, right? Yeah, damn right. And an alum.
Can I hit you off with something right off the top of this interview, totally unrelated to what we'll talk about the rest of the way? More relevant, probably, but I just got to ask: if you become a Hall of Famer as an Ohio State alum, is it particularly good practice to go on TV shows with your Hall of Fame jacket on as your outfit for the show? I'm just curious.
What are you alluding to, Lamar?
I'm just curious. Is that an Ohio State thing, or can you help?
Well, I don't know, guys. I mean, Jonas just introduced me. It seems like this is going to be a no-grab-ass segment. Right?
I just needed to know, is that standard protocol if you make it to the Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame?
Can someone fill me in on what the hell we're talking about?
I'll tell you. All right, Chris Carter, Ohio State alum, you know, whatever you make of his time at Ohio State.
Alum of Middletown High School in Middletown, Ohio.
Chris Carter was just seen on TV wearing his Hall of Fame jacket.
Doing the show, though.
Yeah, doing the show, hosting the show in his Hall of Fame jacket.
Hosting a show in the fame jacket?
Yeah. Yes. So,
on your network.
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, I guess if I had one, I'd probably wear it everywhere.
I don't know.
You know?
No, okay. It's like wearing.
That's why I was asking.
It's like when you're in high school and you first get your letter jacket and you're wearing it like everywhere, even if it's like 90 degrees out in the summer, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, okay. Man. All right. Well, you know,
I was just curious because he was really he was really humbly flexing his Hall of Fame jacket on television.
Did it go on? Like, did it go unaddressed? Like, did he just show up wearing it and nobody said anything?
The volume on the TV was down. We just happened to notice it in the studio, and I was like, "Is he wearing a Hall of Fame jacket?"
Is that like one of those things where like you got to wear it to remind people? Because we're getting to a day and age where, like, a lot of us, I mean, me, LeVar, and all that, I talk to some of these kids, for example, on college campuses, and you got to remember, they're 18 years old.
They don't know any of us.
I mean, my last days in college, you know, when we were talking college, he was 3. You know, then you get in the NFL and all that. It's like, so there's just all this, there's all those, like, conversations. Is he doing it for relevance to, like, remind people, like, what he was or what he is?
I don't know.
Well, first of all, I mean, Brady, there's, like,
Ohio
a lot
State
of...
State people are.
There's a lot of scary... We all want to do our age. There's a lot of scary math out there when you, like, look at, like, how old, like, high school seniors were at this point in your life. You don't want to go down that rabbit hole, trust me.
When you go into a store and they go, you turn 21 on this day, and you're like, Jesus, I remember where I was on that day. Like,
have a child that's 21, and you're like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's awful. Albert, so the story out of the NFL, obviously the Deshaun Watson trade rumors have picked back up. The Dolphins, according to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, that there could be a deal done as soon as next week. I mean, where are we at with this, and how legitimate is this story, and how close could we be to a Deshaun Watson trade?
Well, I mean, John McClain's as plugged in as anybody in that market and has been for a long time, so I would take anything that he'd report there seriously. I don't know how much has changed, really, and where this has been, and I think it's been in the same place for a while, which is Nick Caserio doesn't want to take a discount, and he wants full price for Deshaun Watson. And, I mean, like, his whole thing is, like, this is going to be, whenever I move Deshaun Watson, the sort of move that's going to define my time as a general manager here. And so, you know, if I take 50 cents in the dollar and he's cleared in 3 months, then I'm going to look like a horse's ass. There's no other way to put it than that, you know. And so unless I can get full price, you know, what's best for the Texans right now is to sit on his rights and wait out the right offer. And, you know, this is a tough time to get the right offer because there are fewer teams by definition right now that need quarterbacks because we're in the middle of the season. So do I think it gets done? Maybe. I think it's possible. But I think a lot of that's going to ride on how desperate the Dolphins get. And, you know, look, I don't think Tua's played horrible. But I also don't think if you're the Dolphins right now, you can look at it and say confidently, for the next decade, we can compete with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and all the rest of the young quarterbacks in the AFC. Maybe Tua gets that level, but I don't know that you feel confident right now that he's going to get there. And if you're Brian Flores and Chris Greer, you're 1-5 right now. Likelihood is it's going to be 3 straight years without making the playoffs. If you get a fourth year, which I think they would you feel comfortable tying your job security then to Tua Tagovailoa? You know, I think that that's why you see the Dolphins exploring their options at the position. And, you know, certainly I think this also ties back to the fact that, you know, in 2020, I'm going to be guilty as charged on this because I thought Tua was a better prospect coming out than Justin Herbert. You know, if you look at anything I said back then, and I'm not a scout, but that's the way that I felt then. But, you know, the decision to take Tua over Justin Herbert seems to have really left a mark with that organization. And, you know, like, I think right now if you're them, the fact that Tua hasn't come along as fast as you maybe had hoped he would has put you in this position where, you know, maybe to save your job, if you're Chris Greer or Brian Flores, you're looking at going and meeting Nick Caserio's price.
I mean, he's played 12 games. He started 12 games.
I know.
How would you really be able to know? And they've changed offensive coordinators. They've added new pieces. The offensive line play is young, and it's still developing. I think if your whole rationale for why you're upset with the lack of growth from Tua is because you're looking at Justin Herbert – then you're completely blind to the fact that, like, last year was a gift, was luck for the Chargers.
Yeah.
They punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung. Without that, we don't know what would have happened. I mean, it literally, out of a complete circumstance, he gets thrusted into play and plays great, and now we have this opinion of him, which is accurate and true. But I'm just saying, like, you got to stop comparing what you have to what else is out there. Because the other thing is, well, you're not finding it in this class, that's for sure. You'd have to trade for Watson, which comes with a lot of question marks.
Here's the issue, though, Brady. The issue is, like, if you're Greer or Flores right now, you have tops 2 years to get it right, to convince the owner that you're the right people to lead that franchise. And, like, I think you just look at the climate, the position across the NFL and what's happened, and you see what the Rams and the Niners did during the last offseason. And remember, those two teams had quarterbacks under contract long-term who were in their 20s who had recently led them to Super Bowls. And they pulled the plug on those guys, and Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff, because they felt like they needed to upgrade. They needed to level up at the position. And, you know, I think that's the sort of teams now where, like, good just isn't good enough. And I think in a way it's the Mahomesization of the NFL. As a lot of teams are looking at the Chiefs and kind of staring up at that mountain and saying, can we compete with them? And then, you know, you look at the Bills with Josh Allen and the Chargers with Justin Herbert, and maybe it's not so much what those guys are right now, but it's what those guys might become. You know, and so I think, you know, over the next 2 years, if you're Brian Flores and Chris Greer, you have to convince ownership that you put the team in a position to compete long-term. And I'm with you in what you're saying about what's around him and that some of the mistakes they've made personnel-wise in what they've done with the return for guys like Laremy Tunsil and Minkah Fitzpatrick, they haven't done enough with the return. So maybe now they need a little bit more out of the quarterback position because they haven't been able to kind of prop Tua up enough. And so I think it's a complicated situation, but part of it is that they committed to kind of this slow build. And now it's just, do you have enough to support a young quarterback? And are you able to get answers on your young quarterback quick enough? Or is it time now to say, okay, we need a quarterback who can literally carry the whole operation, and we believe Deshaun Watson's that guy?
All right. And then saying that Deshaun Watson is that guy, we had a debate, I think. We had a discussion. Discussion is better. Early on in the show about if this trade were to take place, where does that put the National Football League in terms of how they need to handle the situation?
Yeah.
And basically the question of how they have not handled the situation, seemingly leaving it up to the organization to handle it unless they needed to be involved. What's your take on that? If this trade does indeed go through, how does the NFL handle this, and how does Miami handle this?
It's fascinating, LeVar, because I can tell you guys that I know owners of teams that have sort of sniffed around the idea of trading here have talked to the league office and asked them, is he going on the exempt list if we trade for him? And I think there's at least a fear out there that if you're one of these teams and you trade for the guy, the league could decide we're putting him on the exempt list. Because up until now, the Texans have basically done the NFL a favor, right? Where the NFL doesn't have to do anything because the Texans have basically put the guy on ice, and the Texans and Watson have come to this implicit agreement, like, we're not going to put you in harm's way, we're going to pay you, but you just need to not be a problem for us right now. And so if the Texans find a trade partner, a huge part of that, a huge hoop to jump through for whatever team it is what is the league office going to have to say about this? Because now all of a sudden the dynamic changes completely. Now, instead of this sort of being an issue in the background, you're going to have a guy with 23 pending lawsuits going out there as a starting quarterback every week. And you know, like, for obvious reasons, I think the scope of this story changes. And so I think that that's something that's definitely on the minds of the owners who've been involved in this and who have had their GMs, their coaches sniffing around this situation. You know, and I think that for all four of the teams that we've sort of, I think, pegged as being monitoring this over the last few months, and Denver, Miami, Carolina, and Philly. It's been a question that I think that they've been seeking answers for over the last, I would say, 3 months or so.
Albert, last one for me here. It's Albert Breer, MMQB, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Two Pros and a Cup of Joe, Jonas Knox, Lavar Arrington, and Brady Quinn. Thursday Night Football later on tonight, Case Keenum is getting the start. From people you've talked to, how does the organization feel about Baker Mayfield as their guy moving forward?
So, I mean, I had Andrew Berry tell me on the record that he felt comfortable paying him. And he felt comfortable giving Baker Mayfield an extension based on what he did over the first 3 years of his career. But they haven't done it yet. And I think what's open-ended is, like, how far are they willing to go to do a deal with him? And then the flip side is Baker willing to take a little bit less? And that's where I think the rubber is going to meet the road in this situation. And it's interesting because, you know, I think the context of paying a guy $40 or $45 million a year is a lot different than if he's willing to do something at 25 or 30. And we have not seen quarterbacks in Baker's spot willing to do that in the past. So this is just a fascinating situation that I think is going to continue to evolve over the course of the season. And tonight's one of those nights where, you know, in a way we're going to get a window. Because you have a guy in Case Keenum who's got a lot of experience starting in the NFL, who brought a team to an NFC championship game. And so, you know, you talk about like that whole, I think it's a baseball stat, right? Like wins over replacement, right? So, like, I think tonight we're going to sort of get an idea. And I think beyond just what we can see, the guy, like just people watching the game, I think the Browns are going to kind of get a real-life look at, like, okay, here's what a guy who's sort of a journeyman quarterback looks like in the offense that Kevin Stefanski's been running. And, by the way, without Nick Chubb and without Kareem Hunt, so the running game's not going to be quite the same. And how can we match that up against what Baker Mayfield is? And, you know, I think the other piece of context here that's really important, too, is sort of what's ahead in the next offseason. And if Watson isn't traded between now and November 2nd, the possibility exists you're going to have Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson out there in February and March. And so that's another piece to all this, too, where if you're the Browns, you look at it and say, we're cool, we're going to wait right now, and we're going to see what's out there for us in the offseason in 2022, and then maybe we're going to play our negotiation with Baker up against what might be available out there for us on the veteran market. The fascinating situation, because I think if you look at the rest of that team, that roster is very much in a position to win right now. And, you know, I think the organization is as stable as it's been in a long, long time. And Brady knows this better than anybody else. It hasn't been like this in a while there, where they might be an attractive destination for a veteran quarterback like a Wilson, a Watson, or a Rodgers.
They're not an expansion team anymore. I felt like they were still that when I got drafted there for a while, especially with the turnover, and now they're finally to a point since they've come back where I don't think you look at them that way anymore. But for a long period of time, they were still an expansion team.
20 years, unprecedented.
Yeah, it's been a while. Get him on Twitter at Albert Breer. Albert, senior NFL reporter for the MMQB. Always good stuff. We appreciate it. Let's do it again next week.
All right, thanks. And hey, if Brady's got like his Notre Dame Hall of Fame jacket, or LeVar's got his Penn State Hall of Fame jacket, I'd encourage those guys to wear it on the show for my appearance next week, all right?
Good. Because it wouldn't add up to an NFL Hall of Fame jacket, so it's a humble flex, and you just humbly flexed on us that one of your alums was wearing his Hall of Fame jacket. It's all right. It's good, AB.
Well, I don't know. Are either of you guys – are either of you guys college football Hall of Famers?
I'm going to get it. Better get it.
All right.
Not there, but hope to at some point.
Yeah.
But even then, there. I would never wear anything or advertise that. That's just me.
I can't wait to
I hope they have rings. Do they have rings for the College Hall of Fame? That's my final resting place. I won't get it in the pros. So, and I'm not saying that that's a qualifier, but I definitely want this College Hall of Fame. So,
well, listen, I mean,
do they have a blazer? Do you get a blazer? I don't even know.
I don't know. I was asking you.
See,
we're
not even significant enough for you to know. Like, College Hall of Fame isn't even significant enough. That tells you all you need. That's
I love college football. I don't know what you guys are talking about. You guys know that.
I hope they have a ring so I can wear it everywhere.
Well, listen, regardless of what attire you're wearing, it's always good to have an outfit.
Put a cue code on it with all my highlights.
Yeah,
that converts into a necklace.
That's how it works.
That's how I'm going to do it if I get in.
So, I got
you, Brady. Yeah. Don't worry.
I'll be the guy giving you guys the speech.
We're going to give you the fan one. Yeah. We're going to give you the fan version of the
ring. That's good. Yeah, that's what I want. I want the fan
and
version.
And the jacket.
Yeah. You can get that at like a dollar store somewhere, I think.
We're going to give you the Hall of Fame jacket and the ring, and it's going to read and be inscribed. The Joe.
The Joe.
The slappy.
Yeah.
Albert, let's do it again next week, man. Always fun.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy.
At Albert Breer on Twitter.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.